Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Ed Martin. Ed Martin has taken over the reins of the Phyllis Schlafly organization, which is really tremendous. Phyllis Schlafly has been doing fantastic work since the early 1960s, and the organization's website, by the way, is phyllisschlafly.org. Schlafly is spelled S-C-H-L-A-F-L-Y. And basically, I think the overall thrust of this visit on the air will be along the lines of getting Christians mobilized to do more for God in the realm of politics at this present time. Ed, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
I'm glad to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Tell us a little bit about your own personal background, and then we'll talk a little bit about Phyllis and how your lives intersected, and then we'll get into idea of getting involved.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, life is so interesting how we end up where we are, and I've been so grateful to the Lord for how he's done it. Right after I finished college, I spent a couple of years overseas. One of them was in Indonesia. And during that time in Indonesia, I tell people I kind of came face to face with being an adult, and happily the Lord, rebirthed me, in him, and I kind of turned a lot more in my life, to focus on my faith and feeling like I had, come to know the Lord in a special way. And so from that time on, I went to law school. Actually, I did a graduate degree in ethics because I'm concerned about healthcare ethics, bioethics, especially at the end of life. Mm. But I ended up doing a lot of different things, including litigated for pro-life groups to help pro-life pharmacists who were being persecuted. And I ended up suing Rod Blagojevich, then the governor of Illinois, now a member of the Illinois Federal Penitentiary,
he had a bad hair day.
I kind of bounced along, and along the way I realized what Phyllis Schlafly later taught me in a phrase she used. You know, politics is where the action is, and what we mean by that, what she meant by that, is a lot of things are decided in the realm of politics. You know, there's a lot of our values and a lot of things that happen. So I became more involved in politics in St. Louis, where I was from and where I've been from for 25 years. I grew up on the East Coast, but I lived in St. Louis, and I became the chairman of the Board of Elections in the city of St. Louis. I became chief of staff to the governor in Missouri, ran for office myself in 2010. And along the way, I got to know Phyllis Schlafly, who was raised in St. Louis, lived for a lot of her life in Alton, Illinois, just about 15, 20 miles up the river, but had then come back down to St. Louis and was working her. The headquarters of our Eagles organization is in St. Louis and Clayton. And I got to know Phyllis. In the late 90s, because I knew of her leadership. But then as a candidate in 2010, she really took me under her wing. And I didn't win, and then in 2012 I was Attorney General nominee for Missouri, didn't win again. Phyllis used to like to say she lost twice for Congress herself, and losing is a great educator. But then I became the chairman of the Missouri Republican Party. And at the same time, I went to work for Phyllis about part-time. And so that was when I, day-to-day, this is 2013 through 2015, I was on the RNC as a chairman of the party, really learned politics. We got involved. And as we ramped up towards 2016, Phyllis asked me to take over as president of the organization. And obviously, you know, she had a very specific commitment to keeping the Republican Party pro-life, keeping it more conservative, mm-hmm. and helping elect a new president. So that's in a nutshell. Along the way, God blessed me with a beautiful wife, mm-hmm. and we have four children, and we're very blessed in that way. So it's been an exciting time, and here we are.
And you spend a lot of your time in D.C. as well as in Missouri.
Yeah, I do. You know, in fact, when I look back, Phyllis opened up a D.C. office of her Eagles in 1981 after Reagan won. And I looked at her notes on it, and I talked to her a little bit about it before she passed away in September of 2016. She did that because she knew Reagan. It's counterintuitive. She knew Reagan back then needed conservatives in the Capitol to hold him accountable and to make him better. And Reagan, in fact, when he nominated Sandra Day O'Connor, then a state-level judge in Arizona, very pro-abortion, Phyllis led the pickets around the White House saying, mm-hmm. this isn't a good pick. Of course, a year or two later, she was actively helping the president in Geneva in his taking on the Soviets and all. So Phyllis believed that you have to make a president, even a Republican, better and work at it. And so I spend a lot of time in Washington trying to make sure that the so-called conservative Congress, it was a bit of a failure in some ways, but also this president, that his administration gets it right. There's a lot of legwork to be done to make sure that he does as well as he's doing, and even better.
All right. Well, thank you for this little background. Just a couple of real quick questions. You got reborn, you said, in Indonesia, which is really an amazing thing because that is a that is the largest Muslim country in the whole world. And where were you? Jakarta? I mean, how?
Well, it's just short version.
How did you get reborn?
Yeah, it was funny. We're talking in this season. It was just around Easter in 1993, and I was actually in Sulawesi, which is north of Jakarta. I had spent some time in Jakarta. I spent some most of my time in research in Medan, North Sumatra. But I was in Sulawesi around the Easter time. Didn't have any family, of course, and I found myself with no church to go to. I didn't know anyone. It was kind of a mistaken way. All I had was my Bible and myself, and I was really homesick. I was really a 23-year-old kid, and I was homesick. And I just kind of remember that Easter being very special because I turned to the Word, and the Lord really strengthened me and encouraged me. And I look back on it as a real pivotal moment in my life. And I didn't realize when we were going to do this interview, it's right around this time of year. But I was in Sulawesi, kind of out in the middle of nowhere. At that time, Indonesia was still the largest Muslim country. It had not had such a militant strain. There's real militant Islam there now. It still was Islam, so it's not exactly too friendly to Christians, but it was a little bit less strident than it is right now.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, next point. You said you were involved in some lawsuits for Christ for the pro-life cause.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I ask you, what was that under a particular organization?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I was very proud. Americans United for Life was the organization, and they received a grant. You know, God has such a real way to turn us around. They received a grant. I believe it was even from the Knights of Columbus at the time. I got to look back at my notes, and it was to hire a lawyer to help protect conscience of pro-life medical professionals. And I was hired to do that. They only bought about half of my time. I had a little law practice. And within 6 months, we had these pharmacists who were pro-life pharmacists who were being instructed by the Illinois Board of Pharmacy to dispense RU486 and other abortifacients. And there we were in the middle of this fight, such an important fight. So I was very proud to do that. Yeah.
Interesting. And here you're saying that you refer to the Knights of Columbus, and about 3 or 4 months ago, some of the very liberal senators were raking over the coals a would-be Trump nominee to the courts. I believe he made it, but they were saying, oh, if you're going to go on the court, do you renounce your membership with the Knights of Columbus? Because this is an extremist organization. And it's my understanding, by the way, the Knights of Columbus is the largest Catholic organization of lay people, and a lot of what they do is just good works and stuff, but because they believe in pro-life, and you know, in today's milieu, that's so politically incorrect, we can't countenance that.
No, and you're right about that. There were some of those. There is a real anti-Christian. It's an anti-Christian, not just anti-Catholic bigotry that they try to make you renounce your faith and say, you know, keep that to yourself. And of course, so that's right. I know the Knights of Columbus well because of that time. And as you point out, they're a massive philanthropic service. They give a lot more money away than they do even direct service. And but again, they're not particularly extreme. They just happen to be, you know, Christian, and many of the issues opposed to the modern culture, which is what disturbs the modern culture so much.
Yeah, and then as far as your involvement in politics in Missouri, surely you must know my good friend Bill Federer, who's been a guest on this program.
Oh, yeah.
I love Bill. Yeah. I interview him all the time. He's fantastic.
He's amazing, and you know, Bill's an example of people, the way Lord doesn't help you win. He ran a couple times for the congressional seat that I ran for, and when I ran, I called him, he gave me great advice and all, but he's an extraordinary, I don't think he would mind the term, he's a popular historian. I mean, he's clearly a historian, but he's able to take history and make it available to us in a popular sense, and he's very edifying. He's a wonderful man, that's right, he's a great guy. The Federers are a wonderful family.
Yeah, and he, and by the way, even in his campaigns, even though he lost, he did at least derail the the Gephardt for president train. So, or Dick Gephardt, rather.
Dick Gephardt.
Now, I've got a book here, and we only have about 4 minutes remaining. Phyllis Schlafly. This book is called Phyllis Schlafly Speaks, and I believe you may have edited this book. Yeah, it says edited by Ed Martin. This particular one is volume two on Donald Trump. Early on, she was a supporter of Trump and recognized in him the potential to further the conservative agenda. Obviously, the conservative never Trumpers would not agree with her, but how about a few comments on that?
Yeah, it was a very interesting experience. I can tell you, I was firsthand sitting at her knee as we went through this. It was extraordinary. You know, Phyllis Schlafly attended the 1952 Republican convention.
Oh, wow.
was a Taft supporter when they rolled the establishment rolled against Senator Taft and then went for Eisenhower, and attended every convention after that, she and her husband, until he passed, and then her through 2016. So she had real experience, and she started out the cycle. She thought maybe the man who had the best chance was Scott Walker. She thought he was pretty good and conservative,
yeah,
and he stood up to the unions. He'd been really tough, and she thought he might be. So she did a lot of watching. But when Trump came down the escalator, Phyllis was captivated by a couple of things. Number one, she believed that he had the ability to win. I mean, this is a factor. You know, you can say it doesn't matter, but you know, politics is where the action is. But it's also, you have to be practical. She thought he knew how to play the media. He'd been she laughed at how he played. The game. And then she listened, and on immigration and trade, in fact, I found a column Phyllis wrote in 2011 where she said in a sort of throwaway paragraph, how come the only person in America that's talking about the Chinese stealing us blind is Donald Trump? 2011. So she was watching on trade and immigration and saw him seize on those issues. And I once went to her and I said, Phyllis, how do we handle the question when someone says, yeah, but is he a late convert, a non-believing convert to life and to all these issues? And she said, well, we have to hold him accountable. She said, but the trade and immigration, he's been talking about for 30, 40 years. And she said, and you just sort of start to sense a rhythm of these folks. Now, she held off endorsing him until March of 2016, but she wrote about him about 60 times, and she was writing about his positions. And part of what she was doing was laying a marker for who he said he was to hold him accountable. You know, she and I and Brett Decker wrote this book, The Conservative Case for Trump, which came out the day after Phyllis died in September 2016, made the New York Times bestseller list. But we were partly writing it so that we could hold the conservatives who we thought would be worried about aspects of Trump, and also to tell Trump and the world, this is who we think he is. And Phyllis was proven right. I think this president has been, he's not perfect, but in terms of pro-life, in terms of America First, just yesterday or maybe a couple weeks ago, I can't recall now, the International Criminal Court, which is one of these crazy multinational jurisdictions that try to mistreat Americans, came out in favor of America and Trump, partly because I think they just are afraid of Trump's leadership and the way he does things. So it was a process with her, but it was also a calculation, and also it was a relationship. She called him on her birthday. He called her on her birthday. He came to her funeral. She knows,
wow,
and he knew how indebted he was to her.
Well, her funeral, was that in Alton, Illinois, or St. Louis, as opposed to D.C.?
It was in St. Louis. It was in St. Louis on Saturday, and he came off the campaign trail with Mrs. Trump, and they came, and it was wonderfully done. He didn't stay for the mass and the service.
Yeah.
He came and spoke right before because he knew that security and everything would be wild. But it was very respectful. It was impressive.
Okay, we have less than a minute to go.
Yeah.
What do you want to say about getting more Christians and people of goodwill to get involved in the political process?
Well, I this is a key thing. I'm glad you gave me a few 30 seconds to say this. Our people, meaning conservatives that love America and love the Lord, we have to redouble our efforts. The evil one, it's in the good book. The evil one is everywhere, and he's in this world. And we have to band together in our churches, in our communities, in our parties when we can stomach the Republican Party sometimes, and understand what's at stake. And it's that the fake news is scary. The real news is scarier. But this is a key moment, and we can't put our light under a bushel basket. We have to get out and band together. And our organization believes we get it right on the politics and the policy. Excuse me, we get it right on the policy and the values, but we also have to be effective in politics. And people that want to find out more, you know, can email me directly, ed@phyllisschlafly.com, or go to phyllisschlafly.com. It's an important time. Now through the 2020 election, we have to stand up for what's right. There's a lot of darkness on the edge of the light right now, and we've got to keep fighting for light.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us. By the way, Calvin Coolidge said, if good men don't hold office, bad men will. Schlafly is spelled S-C-H-L-A-F-L-Y. Thanks, Ed. God bless you and all the best.
God bless you. Thank you.